Chapter 22 Personifications. Through the wide, dripping arch of the gate of trees I ran, and out onto a broad expanse of grass, now spangled with tents. Somewhere a megatheer roared and shook its chain. There seemed to be no other sound. I halted and listened, and the megatheer, no longer disturbed by my footfalls, settled back into the death-like sleep of its kind. I could hear the dew running from the leaves, and the faint interrupted twitter of birds. Something else there was as well. A faint wick, wick, quick and irregular, that grew louder as I listened for it. I began to thread a path among the silent tents, following the sound. I must have misjudged it, however, for Dr. Talos saw me before I saw him.
My friend, my partner, they are all asleep, your Dorcas and the rest, all but you and I, over here.
He flourished his cane as he spoke. The wick-wick had been his chopping at the heads of flowers.
You have rejoined us just in time, just in time. We perform tonight, and I would have been forced to hire one of these fellows to take your part. I'm delighted to see you. I owe you some money, do you recall? Not much, and between you and I think it falls. But it is owed, just the same, and I always pay.
I'm afraid I don't recall, I said, so it can't be a great sum. If Dorcas is all right, I'm quite willing to forget it. Provided you'll give me something to eat and show me where I can sleep for a couple of watches. The doctor's sharp nose dipped for an instant to express regret.
Sleep you may have in plenty, until the others wake you. But I'm afraid we've no food. Baldanders, you know, eats like a fire.
The Theasis Marshal has promised to bring something today for all of us. He waved his stick vaguely at the irregular city of tents.
But I'm afraid that won't be before mid-morning at the earliest.
It's probably just as well. I'm really too tired to eat. But if you'll show me where I can lie down...
What's got your head? Never mind, we'll mask it with grease paint. This way?
He was already trotting before me. I followed him through a maze of tent ropes to a heliotrope dome. Baldander's barrow stood at the door, and at last I felt certain I had found Dorcas again. When I woke, it was as though we had never been separated. Dorcas's delicate loveliness was unchanged. Jolenta's radiance threw it into shadow as always, yet made me wish, when the three of us were together, that she would leave so that I might rest my eyes on Dorcas. I took Baldanders to one side, an hour or so after we were all awake, and asked him why he had left me in the forest beyond the piteous gate.
I was not with you, he said slowly. I was with my Dr. Talos.
And so was I. We might have sought him together and been of help to each other. There was a long hesitation. I seemed to feel the weight of those dull eyes on my face, and thought, in my ignorance, what a terrible thing it would be if Baldanders possessed energy and the will to anger. At last he said,
Were you with us when we left the city?
Of course. Dorcas and Jolenta and I were all with you. Another hesitation.
We found you there, then.
Yes, don't you remember? He shook his head slowly, and I noticed that his thatch of coarse black hair was touched with gray.
I woke one morning and there you were. I was thinking. You left me soon.
The circumstances were different then. We had arranged to meet again. I felt a pang of guilt when I recalled that I had never intended to honor that promise.
We have met again,
Baldanders said dully. and then, seeing that the answer failed to satisfy me, added,
"There is nothing here real to me but Dr. Talos."
"Your loyalty is very commendable, but you might have remembered that he wanted me with him, as well as yourself." I found it impossible to be angry with this dim, gentle giant.
"We will collect money here in the south, and then we will build again, as we have built before, when they have forgotten."
"This is the north, but that's right. Your house was destroyed, wasn't it?"
"Burned,"
Baldander said. I could almost see the flames reflected in his eyes.
"I am sorry if you came to harm. For so long, I have thought only of the castle and my work."
I left him sitting there and went to inspect the properties of our theater. Not that they seemed in need of it, or that I could have detected any but the most obvious lacks. A number of showmen were gathered around Jolenta, and Dr. Talos drove them away and ordered her to go into the tent. A moment later, I heard the smack of his cane on flesh. He came out grinning, but still angry. "It isn't her fault," I said. "You know how she looks."
"Too gaudy. Too gaudy by far. Do you know what I like about you, Sir Severian?" "You prefer Dorcas. Where is she, by the way? Have you seen her since you came back? I warn you, Doctor, don't strike her."
"I wouldn't think of it."
"I'm only afraid she may be lost." His surprised expression convinced me that he was telling the truth. I told him, "We only got to talk for a moment. She's gone to fetch water."
"That's courageous of her,"
he said. And when I looked puzzled, he added, "She's afraid of it. Surely you've noticed. She's clean, but even when she washes, the water is only thumb deep. When we cross bridges, she holds onto Jolenta and trembles." Dorcas returned then, and if the doctor said anything more, I did not hear it. When she and I had met that morning, neither of us had been able to do much more than smile and touch with incredulous hands. Now she came to me, putting down the pails she carried, and seemed to devour me with her eyes.
"I have missed you so," she said. "I have been so lonely without you."
I laughed to think of anyone missing me and held up the edge of my Fuligen cloak.
"You missed this?"
"Death, you mean. Did I miss death? No. I missed you."
She took the cloak from my hand and used it to draw me toward the line of poplars that formed one wall of the green room.
"There is a bench I found, where there are beds of herbs. Come and sit with me. They can spare us for a while after so many days, and eventually Jolenta will come out and find the water, which was for her anyway." As soon as we were away from the bustle of the tents, where jugglers tossed their knives and acrobats their children, we were wrapped in the stillness of the gardens. They are, perhaps, the largest tract of land anywhere planned and planted for beauty, save for those wildernesses that are the gardens of the Increate, and whose cultivators are invisible to us. Overlapping hedges formed a narrow door. We passed into a grove of trees with white-perfumed boughs that reminded me, sadly, of the flowering plums through which the Praetorians had dragged Jonas and me. Though those had seemed planted for ornament, and these, I thought, for the sake of their fruit. Dorcas had broken a twig, bearing half a dozen of the blossoms, and thrust it into her pale golden hair. Beyond the orchard was a garden so old that I felt sure it had been forgotten by everyone save the servants who tended it. The stone seat there had been carved with heads, but they had worn away until they were almost featureless.
A few beds of simple flowers remained, and with them fragrant rows of kitchen herbs, rosemary, angelica, mint, basil, and rue, all growing in a soil black as chocolate from the labor of countless years. There was a little stream, too, where Dorcas had no doubt drawn her water. Its source may once have been a fountain. Now it was only a species of spring, rising in a shallow stone bowl to splash over the lip and eventually wind its way through little canals lined with rough masonry to water the fruit trees. We sat in the stone seat. I leaned my sword against its arm, and she took my hands in hers.
"I am afraid, Severian," she said. "I have such terrible dreams."
"Since I've been gone?"
"All the time."
"When we slept side by side in the field, you told me you had awakened from a good dream. You said it was very detailed and seemed real."
"If it was good, I have forgotten it now." I had already noticed that she was careful to keep her eyes away from the water spilling from the ruined fountain. "Every night I dream I am walking through streets of shops. I am happy, or at least content. I have money to spend, and there is a long list of things I wish to buy. Again and again I recite the list to myself, and I try to decide in what parts of the quarter I can get each in the best quality for the lowest price. But gradually, as I go from shop to shop, I grow aware that everyone who sees me hates me and holds me in contempt. And I am aware that it is because they believe me to be an unclean spirit who has wrapped itself in the woman's body they see. At last, I enter a tiny shop conducted by an old man and an old woman. She sits making lace while he spreads their wares on the counter for me. I hear the sound her thread makes behind me as it is pulled through the work. I asked, "What is it you have come to buy?" "Tiny clothes."
Dorcas held her small white hands half a span apart.
"Doll's clothing, perhaps. I particularly remember little shirts of fine wool. At last I choose one and hand the old man money. But it is not money at all, only a lump of filth."
Her shoulders were shaking, and I put my arm about her to comfort her.
"I want to scream then that they are wrong, that I am not the foul specter they take me for. Yet I know that if I do, whatever I may say will be taken as the final proof that they are right, and the words choke me. The worst part is that just then the hissing of the thread stops."
She had taken my free hand again, and now she gripped it, as though to drive her meaning into me.
"I know that no one could understand who has not had the same dream, but it is terrible. Terrible."
"Perhaps now that I am here with you again, these dreams will end."
"And then I sleep, or at least fall into blackness. If I do not wake then, there is a second dream. I am in a boat poled across a spectral lake."
"There is no mystery in that, at least," I said. "You rode in such a boat with Agia and me. It belonged to a man named Hildegrin. Surely you must remember that trip."
Dorcas shook her head. "It is not that boat, but a much smaller one. An old man pulls it, and I lie at his feet. I am awake, but I cannot move. My arm trails in the black water. Just as we are about to touch shore, I fall from the boat. But the old man does not see me. And as I sink through the water, I know that he has never known I was there at all. Soon the light is gone, and I am very cold. Far above me, I hear a voice I love, calling my name. But I cannot remember whose voice it is.
It's my voice, calling to wake you.
Perhaps.
The whip mark Dorcas had carried from the piteous gate burned on her cheek like a brand. For a while we sat without speaking. The nightingales were silent now, but linnets were singing in all the trees, and I saw a parrot, clad in scarlet and green, like a little messenger in livery, flash among the branches. At last Dorcas said,
"What a frightful thing water is. I should not have brought you here. But it was the only place nearby where I could think to go. I wish we had sat on the grass under those trees. Why do you hate it? It seems beautiful to me. Because it is here in the sunshine. But by its own nature it runs down and down forever, away from the light."
"But it rises again," I said. "The rain we see in spring is the same water we saw running the gutters the year before, or so Master Malrubius taught us."
Dorcas's smile flashed like a star. "That is good to believe, whether it's true or not. Severian, it's silly for me to say you're the best person I know, because you're the only good person I know. But I think if I met 1,000 others, you would still be the best. That was what I wanted to talk to you about."
"If you need my protection, you have it. You know that."
"It isn't that at all," Dorcas said. "In a way, I want to give you mine."
"Now that sounds silly, doesn't it?"
"I have no family. I have no one except you. And yet I think I can protect you."
"You know Jolenta and Dr. Talos and Baldanders."
"They are no one. Don't you feel that, Severian?
Even I am no one. But they are less than I. The five of us were in the tent last night, and yet you were alone. You told me once that you don't have much imagination, but you must have sensed that."
"Is that what you want to protect me from? Loneliness? I would welcome such protection."
"Then I will give you all I can for as long as I can. But most of all, I want to protect you from the opinion of the world. Severian, do you remember what I told you of my dream? How all the people in the shops and on the street believed that I was only some hideous ghost. They may be right."
She was shaking and I held her.
"That is part of the reason the dream is so painful. The other part comes from knowing that in some other way they are wrong. The foul specter is in me. It is me. But there are other things in me too, and they are what I am as much as it is."
"You could never be a foul specter, or anything foul."
"Oh, yes,"
she said seriously and looked up at me. Her small, tilted face was never more beautiful than it was then in the sunlight, or more pure.
"Oh, yes, I could, Severian. Just as you can be what they call you. What you sometimes are. Do you remember how we saw the cathedral leap into the sky and burn away in an instant? And how we went walking down a road between trees until we saw a light ahead, and it was Dr. Talos and Baldanders, ready to put on their show with Jolenta?"
"You held my hand," I said, "and we talked about philosophy. How could I forget?"
"When we came to the light and Dr. Talos saw us, do you remember what he said?"
I cast my mind back to that evening, the end of the day on which I had executed Agilus. In memory, I heard the roar of the crowd, Agia's scream, and then the roll of Baldander's drum. He said that everyone had come now, and that you were innocence and I was death. Dorcas nodded solemnly.
That's right. But you're not really death, you know. No matter how often he calls you that. You're no more death than a butcher is because he cuts the throats of steers all day. To me, you're life. And you're a young man named Severian. And if you wanted to put on different clothes and become a carpenter or a fisherman, no one could stop you.
I have no desire to leave my guild.
But you could. Today. That's the thing to remember. People don't want other people to be people. They throw names over them and lock them in. But I don't want you to let them lock you in.
Dr. Talos is worse than most. In his own way, he's a liar. She left the accusation unfinished, and I ventured. I once heard Baldander say he seldom lied.
In his own way, I said. Baldander's is right. Dr. Talos doesn't lie the way other people understand lying. Calling you death wasn't a lie, it was a
metaphor, I suggested.
But it was a dangerous, bad metaphor. And it was aimed at you like a lie.
Do you think Dr. Talos hates me then? I would have said he was one of the few people who've showed me real kindness since I left the Citadel. You, Jonas, who's gone now. An old woman I met while I was imprisoned. A man in a yellow robe, who also called me death, by the way. And Dr. Talos. It's a short list, actually.
I don't think he hates in the way we understand it, Dorcas replied softly. Or for that matter, that he loves. He wants to manipulate everything he comes upon. To change it with his will. And since tearing down is easier than building, that's what he does most often.
Baldander seems to love him, though, I said. I used to have a crippled dog, and I've seen Baldander's look at the doctor the way Triskel used to look at me.
I understand you, but it doesn't strike me that way. Have you ever thought of how you must have looked when you looked at your dog? Do you know anything about their past?
Only that they lived together near Lake Diaterna. The people there appear to have set fire to their house to drive them away.
Do you think Dr. Talos could be Baldander's son?
The idea was so absurd that I laughed, happy to have the release from tension.
Just the same, Dorcas said, that's how they act. Like a slow-thinking, hard-working father with a brilliant, erratic son. At least so it seems to me.
It was not until we had left the bench and were walking back to the green room, which no more resembled the picture Rudisind had shown me than any other garden would have, that it occurred to me to wonder whether Dr. Talos's calling Dorcas innocence had not been a metaphor of the same kind.